Hello and welcome to AZO Nano News for the week commencing the 25th of August 2008, brought to you by AZONano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of AZO Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about the countdown to the switching on of the Large Hadron Collider, micro batteries powered by viruses, and stained glass windows that purify the air. In this week's AZO Nano interview, we speak to Professor Blakey about how he's adapted e-beam lithography techniques that are normally used for writing on silicon wafers to create a unique jersey for the All Blacks rugby team. These stories and more in this edition of AZO Nano News. September 2008 will see particle physicists setting protons on a collision course through the Large Hadron Collider with more energy than ever before. Their intention is to track down the Higgs boson and solve the problem of why the universe contains almost no antimatter. Physicists from the Max Planck Institute for Physics and the Max Planck Institute for Nuclear Physics are playing a crucial role in the experiments and their preparation. With an investment of 4 billion euros, 24 years of planning, development and construction, and around 7,000 employees, the LHC is one of the largest research projects that the world has ever taken on. In the four underground caves that contain the large-scale experiments, physicists want to uncover the secret of why matter exists and how it came about. To do this, they'll send two beams of protons at approximately the speed of light through a 27-kilometre ring-shaped tunnel and allow them to crash into each other in the centre of detectors that can be up to 25 metres high. The result of these collisions in the accelerator can well be called a mini Big Bang, which is exactly what the researchers want. They want to reproduce in miniature what happened when the world was created. The detectors capture any new particles that are created in the collision, register their direction, charge and energy, and the physicists hope for new findings from this data. Forget 9-volt, AA, AAA or D-sized batteries. The energy for tomorrow's miniature electronic devices could come from tiny micro-batteries, about half the size of a human cell and built with viruses. MIT engineers have developed a way to at once create and install such micro-batteries by stamping them onto a variety of surfaces. One day these devices may power a range of miniature devices, from labs on a chip to implantable medical sensors. The team recently described assembling and successfully testing two of the three key components of a battery. A complete battery is on its way. The technique does not involve any expensive equipment and is done at room temperature. Batteries consist of two opposite electrodes, an anode and a cathode, separated by an electrolyte. In the current work, the MIT team created both the anode and the electrolyte. First, on a clear, rubbery material, the team used a common technique called soft lithography to create a pattern of tiny posts, either 4 or 8 millionths of a metre in diameter. On top of these posts, they then deposited several layers of two polymers that together act as the solid electrolyte and battery separator. Next came viruses that preferentially self-assemble atop the polymer layers on the posts, ultimately forming the anode. Plastic coatings could someday help neural implants treat conditions as diverse as Parkinson's disease and macular degeneration. The coatings encourage neurons in the body to grow and connect with the electrodes that provide treatment. Worldwide, researchers are developing medical implants that stimulate neurons to treat conditions caused by neural damage. Most research focuses on preventing the body from rejecting the implant, but the Ohio State researchers are focusing instead on how to boost the implant's effectiveness. The researchers are infusing water-soluble polymers with neurotrophins, proteins that help neurons to grow and survive. They are combining different polymers, some shaped like tiny spheres and fibers, to create composite coatings that release neurotrophins in a steady dose over time. The coatings also give nerves a scaffold to cling to as they grow around an implant. Stained glass windows that are painted with gold purify the air when they're lit up by sunlight, according to a team of Queensland University of Technology experts. Researchers from QUT's School of Physical and Chemical Sciences said that glaziers in medieval forges were the first nanotechnologists who produced colours with gold nanoparticles of different sizes. They said numerous church windows across Europe were decorated with glass coloured in gold nanoparticles. Tiny particles of gold, energised by the sun, are able to destroy airborne pollutants like volatile organic chemicals, or VOCs, which may often come from new furniture, carpet, and paint in good condition. These VOCs create that new smell as they're slowly released from walls and furniture, but they, along with methanol and carbon monoxide, are not good for your health, even in small amounts. Gold, when in very small particles, becomes very active under sunlight, and the electromagnetic field of the sunlight can couple with the oscillations of the electrons in the gold particles and create a resonance. A rare class of materials, known as multiferroics, hold great promise for future applications, for example, as data storage devices or sensors. However, progress has been hampered by the low operation temperatures and high magnetic fields required to control a property of the materials known as electric polarization. A solution to this problem may have been found by researchers from Riken's Advanced Science Institute in Waco and from the Japan Science and Technology Agency, who have synthesized a multiferroic material in which the electric polarization can be easily controlled by small magnetic fields. In a ferromagnetic material, the individual magnetic moments of its atoms are aligned in one direction. In a ferroelectric material, if the positive and negative electric charges are uniformly separated, electric polarization is generated. In multiferroic metals, magnetism and ferroelectricity occur simultaneously, and both properties are coupled to each other. Using a combination of computer simulations and cutting-edge lab experiments, physical biochemists at Rice University have discovered how a small genetic mutation, which is known to cause Wilson disease, subtly changes the structure of a large complex protein that the body uses to keep copper from building up to toxic levels. The protein in question is a multi-domain protein that sits in an internal membrane and regulates the movement of copper atoms inside human cells. Though large quantities of copper can be toxic, our bodies need a small amount for key enzymes involved in, for example, respiration and brain functions. This particular protein acts something like a warehouse manager, locking up bulk quantities of copper and handing it out for use in these proteins. Wilson disease is a genetic disorder that alters this protein's ability to work, causing copper to build up to toxic levels in the liver, brain, eyes, and other organs. Over time, the disease can cause life-threatening organ damage. Wilson disease affects as many as 150,000 people worldwide. Sugar frosting isn't just for livening up boring bran flakes. It can also preserve important therapeutic proteins. Researchers at the National Institute of Standards and Technology have developed a fast, inexpensive, and effective method for evaluating the sugars pharmaceutical companies use to stabilize protein drugs for storage at room temperature. Protein-based drugs such as insulin and vaccines must be stabilized after manufacturing in order to be used safely. For the past 30 years, researchers have been preserving therapeutic proteins by freeze-drying them and coating them with a thin layer of various formulations of glass-like sugars that act to stabilize their molecular structures. This allows them to be safely stored for extended periods of time. Pharmaceutical companies, though they have general guidelines, develop their formulations essentially by trial and error and have to wait up to 2 years to see if the glasses are suitable. The new method will help pharmaceutical companies to make the best choice about which formulations to test and make it easier to stabilize drugs at room temperature. Room temperature storage is vital when the pharmaceuticals are to be used in areas of the world where controlled storage conditions are not available. Diesel engines emit countless carbon nanoparticles into the air, slipping through government regulation and vehicle filters. A new University of Michigan simulation shows that these nanoparticles can get trapped in the lungs and inhibit the function of a fluid that facilitates breathing. Lung surfactant is a fluid containing protein and lipid molecules. It reduces surface tension in the lungs, prevents them from collapsing, and helps transport foreign particles that will ultimately be expelled from the lungs. Inhaled carbon nanoparticles, however, appear to behave differently than most foreign particles. Computer simulations indicated that they wouldn't be expelled, but would become trapped in the surfactant, entangled with fatty lipid molecules that wrap their tails around the nanoparticles and into their central cavities. This is believed to be the first time researchers have demonstrated how these nanoparticles can get caught in the lungs and affect the behaviour of surfactant. Other studies have shown that build-up of nanoparticles in the lungs can lead to inflammation, blood clotting, and changes in breathing and heart rates. Engineers have created a tiny motorized positioning device that has twice the dexterity of similar devices, being developed for applications that include biological sensors and more compact, powerful computer hard drives. The device, called a monolithic comb drive, might be used as a nanoscale manipulator that precisely moves or senses movement and forces. The devices can also be used in watery environments for probing biological molecules. The monolithic comb drives could make it possible to improve a class of probe-based sensors that detect viruses and biological molecules. The sensors detect objects using two different components. A probe is moved while at the same time the platform holding the specimen is positioned. The new technology would replace both components with a single one, the monolithic comb drive. The innovation could allow sensors to work faster and at higher resolution and would be small enough to fit on a microchip. The higher resolution might be used to design future computer hard drives capable of high-density data storage and retrieval. Another possible use might be to fabricate or assemble miniature micro and nanoscale machines. Magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, isn't just for capturing detailed images of the body's anatomy. Thanks to novel imaging reagents and technology developed by Carnegie Mellon University, MRI can be used to visualize with exquisite specificity cell populations of interest in the living body. The ability to non-invasively locate and track cells, such as immune cells, will greatly aid the study and treatment of cancer, inflammations, and autoimmune diseases, as well as provide a tool for advancing clinical translation of the emerging field of cellular regenerative medicine by tracking stem cells, for example. The ability to track the movement and eventual location of specific immune cells is critical for understanding the cell's role in diseases and therapeutic mechanisms, and for developing effective cell-based therapeutics. Other MRI methods for visualizing cells use metal-based contrast agents, which can make it difficult to clearly identify labeled cells in the body, according to researchers. The new approach, fluorocarbon labeling, solves this problem by producing images that clearly show the labeled cells at their precise location in the body. In this week's AzoNano interview, we speak to Professor Blakey about how he and his colleagues have adapted e-beam lithography techniques that are normally used for writing on silicon wafers, along with stamping and imprinting technology for use on textile fibres, to create a unique jersey for the All Blacks rugby team.
This is Cameron Chai here from AzoNano, and I'm speaking today to Professor Richard Blakey from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. How are you doing today, Richard?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, thanks, Cameron.
Excellent. So, recently I was reading about your use of nanotechnology in the All Blacks rugby union team. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, it's something a little unusual for us. We're in a university research group and also connected to a national research organisation called the MacDiarmid Institute, and we do basic research around materials and electronics, material science and nanotechnology. We have a nice fabrication capability here at the University of Canterbury, but I got a phone call one day from someone from an advertising agency who represented Adidas and the All Blacks, asking if we could write names onto fibres. And I'd seen some of this technology in the past for, there's a famous book by Phil Pruitt about focused iron beam systems where he and his co-author have written their names in the title of the book on a human hair and taken an electron microscope image of that for the book cover. So, I wasn't terribly excited about writing names on fibres, but when they mentioned that it was for the All Blacks and that it was for a marketing campaign they were running for the All Blacks this year, my ears pricked up. I asked further about what they wanted to do.
A bit of national pride there.
Yeah, well, national pride, of course. I'm born and bred Kiwi, so anything to help the national team and the national religion is great for us. So the concept that they wanted to do was they wanted to build their campaign around the fabric of the jersey. The jersey that is the fabric that binds the nation is one of their logos that they use for their campaign, and the campaign title is called This Is Not a Jersey. It's about what the All Blacks jersey means to the players, to the team, and in particular to the fans. So they'd started off by the players themselves writing in large white letters on their own jerseys what the jersey meant to them and putting that message up there. But they also wanted to give the fans an opportunity to contribute their mantras about what the jersey meant to them, and also, if possible, to get the fans' names included on the jersey. So they asked us, look, could we write names on fibres, and if so, how many names could we write? Could we write 4 million names on a fibre, with 4 million being the population of New Zealand? And that was going to be a bit of a stretch, but we finally agreed that for this promotion we might be able to do 100,000 names, but we would need a bit of time to get the technology developed, because we've got some good e-beam and optical lithography capability here, but like most micro and nano fabrication labs, we're used to writing on silicon wafers and other planar surfaces, not on, you know, a piece of fiber that's going to get wound into an All Blacks jersey and trampled all over the ground somewhere. So we did a little bit of work around that, combining our silicon fabrication technology with some stamping and imprinting techniques we developed particularly for this application, and came up with a product that you can view at the campaign site thisisnotajersey.com. I think there's even some YouTube videos about what kind of product we've run. And the demonstration we've done so far is to write the names of all 1,073 All Blacks that have played the game since 1894. We did a demo with those 1,073 names on a fibre, and we showed the All Black captain, Richie McCaw, around our labs 2 or 3 weeks ago to introduce him to that technology as well, and he was pretty keen and pretty excited about it.
All right, and so how is work progressing for the 100,000 name project?
Well, we've got everything in place. The campaign runs towards the end of September when the names will be finalised. I'm not sure how many names are online already, but anyone can go online, put their name and put their mantra there. Come 30th September, we'll take whatever names are there and we'll do the writing and the imprinting to present a jersey with one of these special fibres sewn into the Silver Firm emblem to the All Blacks for a Bledisloe Cup match they're playing against you Aussies in Hong Kong on 1st or 2nd of November.
And so how long will it take approximately to print 100,000 names onto a fibre?
The process we've developed, the imprinting is fairly quick. It's you know, 10 or 15 minutes to do a fibre, but the time-consuming part of the process is to master the... We do it as a master and then replication process. So we have to master the stamp. And that stamp mastering uses our e-beam lithography technologies. And we're estimating it will be a weekend's work, maybe 3 days non-stop writing.
And how long would a fibre be that would take 100,000 names?
So the scale that we're using is 10 micron spacing of the name, 7 micron high letters on a 10 micron spacing. So that gives us 100 names per millimetre. So as a single line of names, that would be 1 metre of fibre. And sewing a 1 metre, you know, if you look at an emblem on a Silver Fern on the All Blacks jersey, you know, there'll be more than a metre of fibre sewn in there. But what we're going to do is actually put the writing on both sides, and we'll probably have two columns of names on each side, so it makes it about 25 centimetres long.
And you were saying that people actually approached you to adapt the technology for their application. Presumably you've got similar sort of technology that you've been looking to commercialise or develop for other applications? Would that be right?
Yes, although our focus isn't on commercialisation. Our focus is on basic research, so basic research into fabrication technologies, e-beam, optical and imprint technologies, and colleagues and myself, we do research on, you know, how can we develop new technologies for micro and nano fabrication. So this was a nice case of the application coming to us, rather than us looking at basic technologies and then saying, is that going to be a better technology for making integrated circuits or for making some kind of biochip or stamping out CDs or doing something that there's already an embedded technology there. So this was a match made in heaven, as it were, because we've got the capability at hand, we needed to do, you know, about 6 weeks of development work to get things right for the application, but then we're good to roll now.
There's got to be a lot of people out there who are looking to try and develop technologies and things like that, and who are obviously, you know, looking to sell these or commercialize these technologies with big companies. What was it like working with a global company like Adidas?
Oh, it's very good. We have some contact with Adidas, but we're actually working through their marketing agency, their advertising agency, a company called TBWA Wyben, who are also a global marketing company, and they're just very, very good. They know what they want. They want a product for this campaign. They're really interested in the technologies. In fact, they introduced me to a nice 1950s video, which you can see on YouTube, called The Powers of 10, where IBM, of even back at that time, were, you know, introducing people to the nano world as well as the cosmological world by, you know, producing a film clip of what it would look like to keep zooming in by powers of 10 into an everyday scene at finer and finer scale. So, you know, they're very good at finding the marketing hooks that will interest people, and what they wanted from us was the technology that would work to make their marketing campaign work. And so, you know, fortunately we could deliver, and so everyone's very happy at the moment.
And so does it look like they're going to keep using this technology further down the track, or it's not going to be a once-off, presumably, is it?
Well, it might be a once-off. You know, they're working at their domain, where they are continually looking for new things to keep ahead of other marketing companies getting people hooked onto campaigns. So for them, it might be a one-off, but, you know, we've got this technology now, which we didn't have before, that we will be looking to do other things with it. So we'll be looking for other campaigns to run it out, other applications where fiber imprinting might be useful. So, you know, I'm going to go out this afternoon. I think we might get a little company going and start to try and peddle our wares of seeing who else might like to use this technology after this campaign. The Adidas people have got it exclusively for the rest of this year.
What about, could it be used for something like authentication? Like, for instance, like these jerseys, obviously, you know, they've contained these particular fibres that I would imagine would be very difficult for anybody else to try and duplicate. If they did if there was a limited run of something, rather, you could put a special fibre into a particular item of clothing, and it could be used as proof that it was one of the limited runs, something like that.
That's right. And of course, that's the kind of areas that our thoughts are heading as well. And, you know, there's always the big question of how do you read the authentication tag, or even how do you read the names on these fibres? And it's a matter of scale. The scale that we've used, you can actually see these names in a reasonably low-powered optical microscope. It doesn't need electron microscopes or atomic force microscopes to view the writing, but we do need the power of nanotechnology to get the scale and the precision onto the work that we produce. Even though the letters are 7 microns high, you know, the width of each and the dots on the eyes are about 100 to 200 nanometers in width or diameter. So you can't just do this with a standard laser printer or any other sort of everyday technology. Yeah, it does need,
like an engraving tool.
Yeah, does need the e-beam writer to make it work.
Oh, well, that's very exciting that there's going to be some more nanotechnology that'll be going into the marketplace at the consumer level, I suppose.
Yep.
And also, I'm sure there's no potential health risks with these, as people may have raised with nanoparticles and things like that and carbon nanotubes.
No. Well, we've been very cognizant of that in the work that we're doing, not only this project but any other project. But really, there is nothing different from in this process to the fiber. We're not chemically modifying it or adding nanoparticles. We're just imprinting onto the fiber. So the fibers themselves are regular materials, regular everyday materials. So we're not producing nanoparticles or embedding nanotubes in them to do the writing. So, you know, we're fairly certain that there's no risks involved in this aspect, unless, of course, you were to put one on and think that you were an All Black and go and get trampled by a Springbok Ford pack. I'm sure that would be hazardous to your health.
Very good. And these jerseys, when they eventually produced, they'll be available to the public?
Well, the campaign currently is to do a one-off for presentation to the team. You know, we're working with the marketing company.
Right.
They want this to be a special thing that the fans contribute to the team. But certainly for other campaigns, there would be no issues with manufacturing larger runs of the fibres and putting them into specially marked replica jerseys. And of course, you know, that's a good potential revenue stream for us doing that work. So, you know, we're very excited about the prospects down the track for this.
All right, so for anybody out there who might be looking to get their hands on some nanotechnology history, might want to keep their eye out for some of these All Black jerseys with custom-made fibres in them.
Absolutely, absolutely. You'll need to buy a good microscope to make sure you've got the right one. But again, we can authenticate those with our electron microscopes, or any place that's got good microscopy can authenticate these kinds of things.
Yes, the only bad news is for those who are not New Zealanders, like myself, who's an Australian, not sure if we want to invest too much money in an All Blacks jersey, but otherwise...
Well, you know, these things are global, and I think I'm not sure if Canterbury of New Zealand are still the jersey sponsors for the Wallabies, but, you know, it's a little bit ironic that we're a New Zealand outfit working with a German apparel manufacturer supporting our national rugby team. But, you know, we all live in a global village, so I think we shouldn't be too hung up about these things.
All right then, Richard. Sounds very exciting that you've got something there that somebody's actually wanting to buy already, like somebody like a global company like Adidas, and that your technology will actually be in, well, not quite the marketplace, but on the field, shall we say, in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting for us. And, you know, again, it was a big thrill for us to get Richie McCaw, the All Blacks captain, through and, you know, explaining to him as a very prominent New Zealander what kinds of things we can do with our micro and nanofabrication capabilities.
All right then, Richard, thanks very much for your time, and we look forward to hearing more about your jersey when perhaps it gets presented to the All Blacks.
Great, thanks very much, Cameron.
Azo Nano Business News. Hitachi High Technologies Corporation has developed the SU-8000, a new type of field emission scanning electron microscope that features a newly developed top detector. The SU-8000 was introduced on August 1. The new SU-8000 features a top detector along with a semi-in lens type of objective lens. This technology is a further advance on the popular upper backscattered electron detector used in the S-5500. Brinks, Hofer, Gilson and Leone, one of the largest intellectual property law firms in the United States, is pleased to announce that William F. Prendergast, a shareholder and chair of the firm's nanotechnology group, one of the largest nanotechnology practices in the US, has been named one of the top 10 intellectual property lawyers influencing the field of nanotechnology, according to Nanotechnology Law and Business. 3M ESPE has announced the launch of ProTemp Plus temporization material, a nanotechnology-based bis-acrylic material that includes a new generation of sophisticated fillers. The fillers offer easy handling and eliminate the need to polish. With a string of features, ProTemp Plus temporization was developed to satisfy temporization needs. Applied Materials is advancing semiconductor research with an equipment and service donation to the University of California, Berkeley's Nanofabrication Laboratory in the Center for Information Technology Research in the Interest of Society, or CITRUS. CITRUS is a center of excellence for graduate students, faculty, and industrial researchers to create nanotechnology solutions for many of the world's most pressing social, environmental, and healthcare issues. Alpha ESA has published a new high-purity inorganics catalogue, which lists over 1,000 high-purity inorganic materials, including base metal compounds, rare earth compounds, and ultra-dry materials for air and moisture-sensitive applications. The 104-page catalogue includes Puratronic R high-purity base metal salts, which are the leading choice of pharmaceutical and electronic companies as the basic building blocks for many manufacturing processes. Unidime Incorporated, a majority-owned subsidiary of Arrowhead Research Corporation, announced this week that it's entered into a second joint development agreement with Samsung Electronics Co. Ltd. to extend their collaboration into a second year. The companies have been working jointly to integrate carbon nanotube materials as a transparent conductive layer in display devices. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 25th of August 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast, or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or to let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening.